podcast for the hosts are too handsome to be coy and too legit to be soy. It's Big Dog Baltar, Matt Anchor, Jordan Siegel. Finally back at you on a, not a Monday, a Tuesday. This truly has been the season of the rebellious Big Dog, where we just upload
twice a week, whenever we
feel like it. You'll probably be listening to this Wednesday morning. Maybe some of you driving home on a late Tuesday will be checking us out. But regardless, we're happy to have you here with us. Big Dog Ball Talk, Matt Anchor, Jordan Flegel. Jordan, before we get into some NBA as well as some college basketball talk, lots to cover. Return of Anthony Davis, Cade Cunningham, and his MIP candidacy, whether we think it's legit or not, as well as some struggling teams out west. I got to say, I want to know if there's anything else you can think of offhand in your life that, you know, kind of speaks to this. There are some things that I love, but it's not worth the effort sometimes. It's not worth the work that you put in. One of these things being, or maybe it's little things that can be annoying within them. So as you can see here, I made a little cup of Joe, finished the work day. And, I'd like to admit, maybe in my younger days, I could have just raw dogged this podcast and had enough energy to get through. But, sometimes even the big dog, he needs some aid, some kind of a stimulant to get him through. But
understandable.
If you spill coffee grinds, is there anything worse in life? Legitimately, is there anything worse than trying to clean up these little fucking black specks that stink everything up? Like it pisses me right off.
Well, hold on. What is your coffee setup? Because I don't come in contact with ground coffee. Because I've got my Nespresso machine, which you may have seen, Matt.
Oh wow, yes,
many years old.
Very bougie
now at this point. But not even. It feels like basically a Keurig at this point. But I just throw in that little pod, I don't see how the sausage is made in this case or. If I'm somewhere else, I don't have that. I'm fine with instant coffee as well. So I'm not dealing with the grounds, but I know what you mean, and I can imagine. Yeah, that's just getting anywhere. That's like fine sand.
Oh yeah, essentially. Today, making this one. So again, I've got kind of a dual one. So I make a pot of coffee in the morning. Don't talk to me till I've had my coffee. and so I'll have the pot going, which that requires your coffee filter, your rinds. Sometimes I'll buy a nicer bag of beans, and I'll crunch my own beans, grind them
grinder?
Up, and we got a grinder, baby. We go hard over here, Casa right. de la Icorn. They taste pretty much the same. It's just fucking coffee, but I feel better about it. But I just wanted
to drink
a
single black,
cup.
Right? Just so everyone knows, you drink
no,
it black?
No. Hold tea on. Black. I put a little bit of cream, a little bit of cream.
Hold your fucking phone, Matt. I swear, about a year ago, if not less, you said something about you're whack if you don't take it black. I mean, pause for a second. But
that sounds pretty good. I might start drinking black just to say that.
You said something like that, and if I need to, I'll get Alex to go find the clip. But you claim to drink it
the archives.
To drink your coffee black. I'm fine with it, but a little bit of cream. That's what I do. I go for the milk though.
No sugar.
Yeah, no sugar.
Yeah, I'm fine with milk as well. I can drink it black. There's no problem with it. But I do prefer a little bit of whitening. But I could drink it black if I wanted to. It wouldn't break my wouldn't ruin my day. But anyways, making this little one. We have these it's like a pod. It's like so it has the pod side of it too. So I can do both. But we didn't have any coffee pods. I only wanted one cup, so I have to pour the rinds into this little it's essentially a reusable coffee pod maker. And that just gets everywhere. No matter how hard you try, something's going to get out. And then when you're cleaning it out, because it all sits in there, you can't just throw it in the garbage. You got to clean it all out. Not all of it's going to come out into the garbage. And when you're washing at the sink, it's just like it's never ending fucking cycle of rinds that I just have to keep washing down the sink. And it's just annoying. It looks bad. And it just kind of makes me think, do I really need to do all of this just to get one cup of coffee to do a podcast?
Yeah. I mean, I'm reminded pretty often how old we must sound on this podcast, Matt. These are our
problems. I don't think anybody that listens to this probably just fast forwards through this. These two are just fucking boring now. Their backs hurt. They like coffee. We get it.
Yeah. Yeah. The small inconveniences. Yeah. We used to have girl problems, things of that nature when we were younger.
Tax season's coming up.
we had a legit conversation, and for the first time ever, it wasn't ironic about mortgages the other day. Mm-hmm. Me and you, Matt. It was very brief, but that's you know, we're there at this point. But
fuck it.
No, I mean, I'm with you. I've got
life's
my
over.
Earl,
really,
I've got my Earl Grey tea here. Also needed, to get through this time in the afternoon. But Matt, just quickly indulge me before we go into the podcast. This is actually a good segue because this is about my life, but also about basketball. I've just moved somewhere new, as you know. There wasn't obvious to me that there was any basketball activity anywhere in the goddamn within 50 miles.
Yeah, I wouldn't
miles.
Think.
So I'm looking around. I'm searching desperately. I did something that you probably know is something I never want to have to do, but I posted in a local Facebook group. I said, what's going on here? Where are my ballers at? And there's a men's league happening tonight. So after this call, I'm getting over there. And it goes from 6 to 8:30, the guy said. So this is going to be
perfect.
I don't know if it's every recording here on Tuesday. I don't know if it's every Tuesday, but during the week I'll be able to make that. So you'll hear more, and I'm going to be back on my balling kick. So happy with that.
Well, out there in the boonies, you've got more basketball than I've got here in Sarnhole. Yes. So yes. Congrats to you. I hope you enjoy it. That's cool to hear. Yeah, that's that was very brave of you to put yourself out there, man. You could have
never done that before.
Could have been virtually molested. You don't want to, in today's day and age, man, especially at our advanced age, it's easy to be taken advantage of online. It's always good to find, some place to play. I actually, when I was on my tropical cruise, they had a basketball court up on top. So I was shooting around, man. I was feeling it. I hadn't played in months, but I was like, you know what? This is pretty good.
Any
half
balls
the balls
go in the
were
ocean?
Garbage. No, they had a bunch of nets set up, but I was thinking I ended up playing a friend of my partner's family that was there, and she doesn't know how to really play basketball, but she really wanted to play around the world, and she missed like 5 shots in a row to start it off, and I'm like, keep shooting, like, warm up, like, I've been up here for a little bit, and we're just playing around the key, she can't shoot the 3 or anything. And then she was like, all right, I'm ready to play. I'm like, yeah, you can shoot first. She makes 6 or 5 or 6 shots in a row to start. It almost fucking beat me.
She's
and
a
I was
shark,
like,
man.
Actually, like, if yeah, I thought I was getting hustled, and I was like looking around to see if there was any gaps in the netting. I was just gonna punt the basketball straight into the fucking ocean if I lost that. So I did win, for the record, and I hit an extra 3 just because I wanted to show that I'm the man.
I believe you.
So take that. I'm undefeated against 30-plus-year-old women and around the world.
You're undefeated on the high seas. That's good.
Yes, that too. International waters. No one can touch me on the court. And then I spent the rest of it just doing like ball handling drills because I'm a bit of a psychopath that way. But moving on, it's Big Dog Ball Talk. Matt Eckhorn, George Flegel. We got to talk about the NBA here. Most notably, last night, Monday night, Anthony Davis, A. Disney, coming back to the Dallas Mavericks lineup, a huge long hiatus after, getting injured in his Mavericks debut. Who could have foreseen that happening? My God, what a tragedy. But Brittle Bones Boy comes back to the NBA, limited minutes here in the victory over the pish-posh Brooklyn Nets, 120-101. AD puts up a solid stat line, though, in 26 minutes, 12 points, 6 boards, 3 assists, on efficient 66% from the field, as well as a steal and a block to throw in there as well. Jordan, obviously this one game isn't a lot to take away from. We'll see if they will ride AD in a back-to-back. They're actually going to be in MSG as of recording this Tuesday night. It looks like AD's probably sitting out from what I'm seeing here already, which is hilarious. They're going to play against the Nets, but you won't play the Mavericks. Yeah. We'll sit you. But do you think if Anthony Davis is able to get healthy enough to, let's say, play out the rest of the season after this next game? Because, again, we're really in the nitty-gritty here, folks. About, 20 games left for each team down the stretch of the season. So, actually, I think it's even less than that, more like 15 or 16 for some of these teams. But the Mavericks are only, they're tied with the Suns right now. They don't have the tiebreaker, but they're right in that play-in mix still. Do you think that Anthony Davis can lead the Mavericks into the play-in and potentially into the playoffs without Kyrie Irving in the lineup this season?
I think it could happen. I'm not putting that out of the realm of possibility. Like you said, you look at the standings, it's a jumble. There's been a lot of bad, uninteresting basketball recently. It's been really good timing to a
lot of injuries.
Yeah.
Big Yoke has been gone.
Yeah. And also, guys just sitting out, on the seating at the top for the most part, in both conferences is, it's not going to move around all that much. I know the middle of the West, there's still a lot yet to sort of figure out there, but you know, amidst all that bad basketball, there is specifically where the Mavericks sit right now. There is still some intrigue there. Like, there's a lot of different combinations that could happen. I mean, technically, I think depending on, you know, if one team really slides, the Trailblazers could still maybe get
there. Yeah, they're still alive, man.
It's not looking that likely at this point, but, you know, they're there a couple games behind the Mavs. And, you know, it looked very much there for a few weeks, but for most of the season, that the Suns were not playing very inspired. But now they've seemingly picked it up recently, mm-hmm. and are making their play and push as well. So, you know, I could see the Mavericks doing it, but like you said, like, I don't think Anthony Davis is in a position to, even if he's coming back and playing, he's going to really help their defense. He's going to be sort of a go-to guy and score. But, like, I don't think having AD will allow them to win that many more games than they would have won anyway without him. Like, if they're going to go up against a tanking team or a team that's not really trying to win, they can win. It's at that point of the season where if you're a team that's trying to win, you will win. If you're trying to lose, mm-hmm. you will probably lose, because you know, we've seen it from the Raptors and all the other heavily tanking teams. They're just not playing any of their guys, whether they're injured or not. So I don't know. I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference, but I do think it's going to kind of come down to the wire here. Between the Mavs, the Suns, the Kings, like you said, you know, it seems like the Timberwolves and above have kind of cleared, and they're going to sort of, that top eight is going to stay as is. I don't see anyone really falling off all that much. I know we're going to talk about the Grizzlies and the Lakers here, but I think they're out of that danger of that, you know, deep 9-10 play-in mix. My bigger question though is not like, can they do it? Because I think the Mavericks can, but should they do it? What exactly are they kind of going for here? Like, best case scenario, if you're the Mavericks and you get the 9 or the 10 seed, and you get the 8 seed, and then you have to play the Thunder, is that really what you want to put your fans through after when you go through most of the season before Luka was traded, saying to yourselves, and I was included in this group of like, yeah, the Thunder are clearly the best team in the West, but I could see the Mavs beating them in a series again. I could see Luka playing out of his mind and having, you know, these new additions. We got Clay. We've still got PJ Washington, who plays out of his mind against the Thunder for whatever reason. We still got Kyrie, mm-hmm. like all these things. The fact that we're now, that's the highest ceiling we can get to, a 1-8 matchup that no one in their right minds, no one even in any of, even if you gave all the Mavericks players truth serum, wouldn't think that they could win a series, let alone even maybe one game. Like, I don't think the Thunder would let those guys breathe at all. So
this current lineup, hell no.
Yeah. So it's like, sure, they could make it in. They could sneak in there, the 9 and 10. I don't think Anthony Davis, in his current state, he's going to take a while to ramp up to get like to 100% Anthony Davis. And the other point too is that, like, Anthony Davis playing with a dominant guard like Kyrie is one thing. When Anthony Davis is kind of the only real offensive high level threat that other teams are worried about, it's actually pretty simple to game plan against Anthony Davis. He presents, I think, more mm-hmm. of a challenge for you to score against a team that's anchored by Anthony Davis, because he's so good on that back line. But like, offensively, when it's just him, like we saw that in New Orleans, it's not, and especially now when he's got the injury concerns, he's a little older, not as athletic. Like, it's just, I'm not worried about that team. So yes, they can make it in, but you know, they're not going anywhere. And honestly, I would maybe spare the Mavs fans of that humiliation of that 1-8 Thunder matchup.
Well, I'm honestly shocked that he even came back. I kind of thought that we were going to hear any time now that he was going to be out for the season, just going to shut him down. Because I totally misspoke. They've only got, we're down to the last 10 games of the regular season. I was thinking we're still way ahead. There's only 10 games left for the Mavericks this year. Most teams are around 11 to 12 games, but 10 games. In 2 weeks, we're talking playoffs, baby. Shout out to Pitbull. Kesha.
Insane.
Playoffs. Yes. This is, and it's going to be a good one. But yeah, even if the Mavericks did, let's say, get into the 10 seed here or the 9 seed, and they play either the Suns or, if they play the Kings, obviously we've got our $50 wager about the Kings, but, I don't see the Mavericks beating either of those teams. I really don't. Like, the Suns are heating up a little bit. They still have way more talent than the Mavericks. The Mavericks are so thin. Like the guys, they have just scraped the barrel of free agency and the G League transfers of guys that they can add on that can play for this team because their roster is so thin. Obviously, with Gafford and Lively still also out of the lineup, like it hasn't just been Kyrie and AD. It's also been a lot of the supporting cast. PJ missed some time. Clay missed some time. It's just been the season from hell for Mavericks fan.
If they had Quentin Grimes still, maybe they'd have a better chance.
Yeah, guys putting up 30 points per game there with the disheveled zombie Philadelphia 76ers lineup, yes, which has been embarrassing. And then also the guy they traded for, Caleb Martin, is also out right now. So just the masterclass front office moves here. It's a good thing that if they do miss the playoffs, they've got all those first round picks in the Luka deal. Oh wait, they didn't get a first round pick. Oh my bad. It's crazy. Talking about it, like by far that'll be one of the biggest moves that we'll. We'll probably still be talking about this next year, no matter what happens with the Mavericks.
20 years.
It's going to be crazy. Let's say that they do get into that 9-10 seed. They're playing the Kings or the Suns. I don't have them beating either of them. If they somehow, AD goes nuclear for like 50 and 20 or something and just goes nuts, Spencer Dinwiddie hits like 6 threes or something crazy, something stupid happens like that. There's like absolutely no way they beat the Clippers or the Timberwolves. Both of those teams are actually fucking good. Yes. You would have to be on your A game to beat them, and there's no way that they lose on the road. No way they win on the road, pardon me, against either of those squads. The Wall in LA, and they've got a pretty passionate fan base there in Minnesota. So, generally, I do think the season is a wrap. That being said, I'll say this, they don't have the hardest schedule for the last 10. Obviously, I said they got the Knicks on the road tonight. Probably chalk that one up to a loss, if AD isn't going to be in the lineup for that.
But no
one,
Brunson,
in MSG. It's true. You still got to deal with McHale and OG and Josh Hart. There's some wiggle room for sure. A little bit more attainable there. But then you've got Orlando, competitive game. Chicago, you could win that one. Brooklyn again, probably a win. Atlanta, maybe a win.
Yep.
Then you got back-to-back against the Clippers, which will be huge. And then you got the Lakers, and we're going to talk about them in a little bit here, as well as the Grizzlies to end off the season. But between both those games, they've got the Raptors, probably a win. So I'm looking at here, you've probably got 4 wins out of your last 10 games for sure. I would say 4 you can lock in. So if you can get 5 wins, like you can just hover around that line, like the Suns and the Kings, it's going to be tough for them to finish out winning, I think, for the season. I think they have a little bit of a tougher finish here. I'm just looking ahead. Oh, actually, never mind. The Kings kind of have a cakewalk here. They've got Trailblazers, Magic, Pacers, Wizards, Hornets. Then they've got the Cavs, Pistons, Nuggets, Clippers, Suns to end it off. So the first 5 games, one is tough. The rest of them, you're probably winnable. So pretty good for them there. And then just quickly looking over at the Suns schedule.
Phoenix is a way tougher one.
Bucks, Celtics, Timberwolves, Rockets, Bucks, Celtics, Knicks, Warriors, Thunder, Spurs. Holy shit. Like that might be 2 wins.
Yeah. That's the thing. It looks like Dallas has a better path, but at the same time, Phoenix
worst
wants
roster,
to win.
Better path.
We'll see. But it'll come down to the wire for sure. And I can't believe Sacramento's still in the mix here. My bet is still alive. Whether they'll make it to the final 8, obviously, is yet to be seen. It feels unlikely, but I'll still hope for it. We'll see.
The Kings really, it's funny to me because like coming into the season, I was lower on them. I'm actually higher on them after the De'Aaron Fox trade and everything. I mean, Sabonis has been kind of hurt all year and their personnel does not fit whatsoever. Like the Malik Monk point guard experiment is such a fucking failure. But they have a lot of talent. It's kind of like the Suns. They're just like, fuck it. We got full roll out 5 guys who can play basketball. The Bulls kind of same thing. We're just going to play our best 5 guys and see what happens. And I mean, they've got good talent, but yeah.
Zach LaVine, the play-in king. Do you really want to face him in a 9-10 game, a 7-8 game? He could be nuclear.
Trap game.
Yep.
Well, we will keep a close eye on the Mavericks as well as the Kings there and really the entire Western Conference play-in as we approach the tail end here of the NBA season. Moving on, though, Jordan, Tuesday night, we're recording this. Maybe you're listening to this on Wednesday morning. Again, shout out to you early risers kicking off the day with maybe a cup of Joe or maybe an Earl Grey tea and Big Doug Ball Talk. But there's a huge game going on tonight. We've said it's a little bit of bad basketball going on lately, but we do have a big one here. The Golden State Warriors heading in to South Beach, taking on the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler return game to Miami. I'm so glad that we got it this year, and we didn't have to wait. And, you know, these interconference games, it's, it only happens once. That this could have happened, and it's lined up perfectly for it to go. Jimmy says it's just another game. He doesn't care. Typical response that you were going to get from the disgruntled star after all of the kind of the sourness and the bad blood that happened, you know, in this kind of unceremonious breakup here. But I'm excited for this one, Jordan. I feel like this season we haven't had enough of these games that really, you know, gets the blood pumping. I think that's also maybe a failure on the NBA's part because they don't fucking promote any of this at all. Because if I was, you know, running the NBA, I might be like, hey, this is a cool game. There's going to be some fireworks. And, you know, the teams might get a little chippy here. Check it out. Wouldn't be radio silence. That's all I can say. But this is going to be a good game. The Heat, my boy Andrew Wiggins, he's been hot right now. The last 10 games, he's averaging over 20 points. You know, Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, Khalil Ware, they're all kind of heating up here as well, pardon the pun. Even though the Heat have really been on the losing side of things lately, 1-9 in their last 10.
Awful.
They're clinging on. Like they're so lucky that the Raptors, the Nets, and the Sixers are absolute fucking dog shit because in any other universe, they would be out of this play-in mix. But just like that that last finals run they had where they upset the Bucks at the 8th seed with Jimmy Butler, they will still be in the play-in tournament. Maybe I think it's possible there. Looking at it, Jordan, I mean, what are you excited to see here with Jimmy Butler's return to Miami?
Well, I hope they pan to Pat Riley as much as possible.
Yes, 100%.
I'm assuming he's going to be you know, in his normal spot, his usual spot there. And you know, like Jimmy, that's what you got to respect about Jimmy is I have no doubt that he is going to come out and want to make a statement. Like going back in that building for the first time, like other players, like because you mentioned it there, like him saying, "Oh, it's just another game." That's actually how a lot of players these days seem to like treat these type of games. Like they actually don't really. At least sort of what they let on and how they play, like they don't really care. They just go through the motions. I'm like, can we get some more of an old school mentality here? You know, again, this is another old head like us screaming about how guys didn't used to fucking dap each other up before games and actually hated each other. But like, I do want more of that generally. And you know, Jimmy's going to bring that type of energy to this game. So yeah, I'm excited to see it. Excited to see how, Pat Riley reacts, how Eric Spoelstra reacts. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some jawing with Spo between him and Jimmy because, you know, they've had their run-ins. You know, I also expect if things get chippy, like I'm trying to imagine if things will get chippy. I don't really know if there's anyone on the Heat side that will sort of match the energy and get in Jimmy's face. Like Bam's not going to, you know, even though Bam's tough as nails, he's not going to do anything, I don't think. And I wish there was like a hothead, like a Dylan Brooks or someone on the Heat side to really instigate things, because then, you know,
sign Bev one day, get him on Israel.
Yes, exactly. He really should. You know, if there was someone on the Heat side to instigate things, then you could see Draymond coming to Jimmy's defense a little bit, and then we could get a real brouhaha going. You know, there's stuff could be brewing here, but I think it'll probably be one-sided. Jimmy at sort of the bench, the coaching staff, and the front office, aka Pat Riley, sort of just you know, wanting to send a message, make a statement. I fully expect the Warriors to win this game as well, just with how bad the Heat have been playing recently. I know when they won their last game, big game from Wiggy. But I just want it to be as entertaining as possible, and Jimmy's usually good for that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I do think that, you know, again, it's like you said, the players are really what would make this, you know, the nitty gritty, the, you know, the hard fought hardwood matchup that we kind of want to see. But it doesn't seem like, I know there's always reports and rumors, anonymous player says this, anonymous player says that. And there were some people that said they were frustrated with Jimmy Butler wanting to take like his private planes, but then it was coming out that he was taking these private flights because he was going to check on his dad who was dying and stuff. Like, there's been a lot of different conversations and discussions about, you know, whether or not this was like actual, like he legitimately needed to be doing these kinds of things or not. I mean, even he was just talking about it when they were talking about his return to Miami, you know, saying that it's a 50-50 split between, you know, who's responsible for why everything went to the shitter the way that it did. But it doesn't seem like anyone on that team has like any bad blood with him. It doesn't seem like Jimmy, really him in the front office and the coaching. It doesn't seem like it's anything to do with them. So like, I wouldn't be surprised him and Bam and Tyler Hero are dapping up after the game. I really don't think there's going to be anything like that. It would be cool if there was, because, you know, again, he kind of did fuck him around a little bit this season, but like, at the same time, they weren't even that good, even when he was playing. So no. I don't know. It's kind of a tough one. You know, I would love that Jimmy gets clotheslined by Andrew Wiggins and he becomes the new darling of the Heat. I mean, he's a franchise cornerstone player. I mean, you gotta start respecting him. But this is a I don't think we're gonna get the craziness that we do. But again, I do think that, you know, sometimes you gotta talk yourself into it. You gotta make those rivalries. I mean, Draymond Green is in love with LeBron James, legitimately. But even when they play, he still yaps at him. He trash talks. So you gotta channel that Draymond at least between the whistles here. I mean, hell, I can't believe this is not how I wanted to open the podcast here, Jordan. I went to a men's league final in hockey last night.
There we go.
Brother-in-law playing in that one, and guy on his team. There was a bit of a scrum in front of the net. Goalie gets punched in the face. Guy gets tackled to the ground. You know, there's a bit of wrestling. Put him all into the penalty box and gets all cool. Minute later, someone else crashes the net. The goalie throws a punch. Another guy starts getting into a fight. One dude two hands a guy over the head with a stick. So this is just men's league. These are guys who had to get up and go to work at 9 in the morning, probably earlier here around all the old oil rigs. So if these guys can show that kind of heart and that kind of fight and fire in a fucking game that actually meant absolutely nothing, I think that Bam Adebayo can give Jimmy Butler, you know, a tough foul once in a while down the stretch of this game, or, you know, maybe talk some shit. Just something to, you know, let's get the blood pumping in this matchup. Let's show some fiery. Let's show that you know, men could be men.
And whatever Jimmy has to do to bring that out in some of these Heat players would be great. Even if he pulls a Timberwolves, takes the whole bench of Golden State, Spencer, Santos, all these guys. I don't care what kind of ragtag lineup. Throw Kevon Looney out there, Pat Spencer, and just go and just humiliate, you know, the Heat for a few minutes. They'll wake somebody up. Yep. Even like Davion Mitchell will only take so much before he, you know, starts getting chippy. So yeah, I just want that. I feel like I don't know. Maybe I'm just thinking about it or overthinking it right now and not thinking of stuff that's happened this year. But it feels like there's been less altercations this year than other years. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't really think of many good ones that have happened. There's been a lot of sort of almost tussles and things, but this would be a game for a real one. Draymond's got to put someone in a headlock or kick someone in the crotch or both.
Yeah, why not? At the same time, somehow. The main thing I want to see Jimmy Butler do is, I don't know if you've heard any of these rumors, Jordan, maybe go up to Coach Spo, say to Hame, hey, you two, I heard there's some fiddling going on with someone's ex-wife, won't say who, but one of the two of you, you know, apparently those rumors are shut down, but I don't know, the internet sleuths, Jordan, they say that there's something fishy going on, but we'll be checking in on, you know, Jimmy Butler and his return to Miami later on down the stretch of the season. Let's talk about some end of the season awards here, Jordan. Obviously, we did end up doing our you know, middle of the season, halfway through the season NBA award show that we kind of planned to. The trade deadline was just so crazy that it didn't really warrant it. But here we are with Cade Cunningham as the leader for most improved this season, which is kind of crazy that Cade is, you know, favored. You know, he's a former number one overall pick. He's an all-star. He is, you know, having a career year. But again, we've talked about this at length on this podcast. This is not the type of player that we want to see winning most improved. We want to see the Aaron Brooks of the world getting some love. Not a guy who is supposed to be a generational talent that is going to lead a franchise. It really doesn't make sense to me why he is this resounding favorite when you've got guys like Norman Powell who have really stepped up his game, Dyson Daniels defensively, and even offensively has really kind of come into his own. Tyler Hero and Evan Mobley are two guys. I mean, Evan Mobley, I think, pretty much kind of falls into the same line as Cade, but like Tyler Hero, I think, is another guy who really, really does deserve a lot of recognition. I don't think anybody really thought he'd be able to lead a team as like a number one facilitator, let alone still be their top scorer and, you know, be an all-star type of player. So I think that all those guys, actually, it makes a lot more sense for them to be up for this award rather than Cade Cunningham, who, again, is a franchise cornerstone. He's only in his, fourth season, fifth season. Like, it's just, And his stats aren't even like that much crazier. Like they've gone up, but I still don't see, you know, how you could be like, this is the most improved player when he's just following the trajectory that, you know, he should already be doing. So I want to hear your take on it, Jordan. But once again, I think we're giving two thumbs down to the most improved player of the year race right now.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. As you know, I don't like, first of all, giving the award to someone like Cade with the pedigree of Cade, who is a number one overall pick, as you mentioned, like that's not who the award is supposed to be for. Like this was supposed to be what Cade turned into. And like you said, his stats, I know he's had injury concerns and, you know, he's been on some obviously very bad teams in Detroit, but his stats have kind of gone up the ladder most years, as you would expect like a star player's to go. And now he's sort of having his breakout season as like a star on a winning team. But that's that was expected. So, yeah, from that perspective, I don't like it.
Yeah.
And also, again, I like the award to go to guys who have been in the league for like 5, 6, 7 years. Guys who I think I've said this before, guys who are most improved. Like, I think the most improved award should go to someone who is completely reworked what you thought that they could be. It's like, oh, we know this guy's going to be this type of role player. And then, boom, 1 year, it's like, oh, shit, no, he's like a all NBA type guy, like what Julius Randle did when he went to the Knicks. Like we all kind of knew or thought we knew what trajectory his career was going on. And then he just completely flipped the script on it. That's who the award, I think, ideally should go to. The issue this year,
I would even shout out like a Pascal Siakam. Like, I mean, when he won it, nobody thought he would be a true number one the way he was. Like, I think he completely overexceeded expectations that year. You know, I'd still probably say that was his peak. Like, that was his best season of his career. Yep. So, I definitely think that fits the bill.
And so, yeah, it's guys like that who I'm always going to root for in this type of race. But when you look at it this year, you look at the betting odds and stuff like, none of these guys fit my category because my other rule is that I certainly won't give it to second year players. I'm just totally against that in no matter the situation, but even third year players, I'm kind of like, like I'll deal with it. I'll allow it. But like Dyson Daniels is a third year player. Christian Brown, another guy who a lot of people have sort of highlighted as a contender in this race, also a third year guy. And so I'm like, does this, are we really going to say that they're like the most improved player when, again, like a lot of players come in, they have kind of shitty rookie stats or they have decent rookie stats. Then they hit the sophomore slump. They don't look as good. And then third year, they really break out, especially in the case of someone like Christian Brown. Christian Brown filled a starting spot when KCP left. Like, of course, his stats better go up. They better go way up or he's shit. Yeah. So, there's a lot I'm kind of juggling because of that thing, that issue where there's other guys who I think are a bit early in their careers to win it. And there's not that many good options. I'm all right with Cade being in the mix, but yeah, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like he fits the criteria. You know, I will say, even though the scoring numbers aren't up that much from last year, the assists and the rebounds are impressively up quite a bit for Cade. And you know that you got, I think you do have to take winning into account a little bit. And he's, you know, a huge reason, you know, obviously why they've been a lot better this year. So I'm kind of lukewarm on it. I know you mentioned, did you mention Tyler Hero as well? Cause that's another name I've sort of seen thrown around.
Yep, like, yeah, I
just, again, his scoring also isn't up by that much more. Like he's just slightly better at a lot of things, but he's also just had a lot more opportunity this year, especially with the fact that Jimmy was out and sort of in and then in and out of the lineup and now is gone fully. Like, he stepped in. I understand he was an all-star. I had him on my team. I don't want to take away everything that he's done this year, but I don't really think it falls into the most improved category. So all that, again, all these imperfect cases taken, you know, at face value with everything that we know, I think I'm leaning Dyson Daniels. And just for the fact that, you know, he's doing this on a completely new team. He's come into a new situation and yes, he's been given more opportunity, but it's like, okay, we thought maybe we didn't even know if this guy's gonna, you know, buried there on the bench in New Orleans. We didn't even know if he's gonna crack a rotation on a good team. But here he is in the defensive player of the year conversation as well. Like, I don't think he's gonna win it, but you know, he's being talked about and has shown a lot more sort of offensive skill than people thought. So Again, don't like giving it to a third year guy, but that's where I'm leaning right now. I get the Cade argument, but yeah, it's just it's not for him. Cade can go and win the fucking MVP. Cade can be all NBA. Cade can do all those other things. This is not an award for those type of guys. It's an award for guys like Dyson Daniels, who are coming in and you know, grinding their way, making a living off deflections here. And even though it's a bit early, I like him for it this year.
Well, I said it though there, and I'm surprised that this isn't like, I know you're kind of picking based off of you know, where it looks like the top contenders are based on, you know, some of the odds makers there. But I don't know when this happened, when it just fell off that people didn't want to consider him anymore. How the fuck is Norman Powell not the favorite? I don't get it. I really don't get it. Like, in the beginning of the year, everyone said clear cut runaway favorite, and now everyone just says Cade, and he's not even considered. Like, he's on his third year with the Clippers. It's not like this is just a brand new role for him. He's been on the Clippers for three seasons now, and his points per game last year, or even the last 2 years, if you want to talk about his first 2 years in the Clippers, you know, he's averaging about 15.5, 16 points per game. He's up to 22.7 points per game this season. The assists and the rebounds have always kind of hovered around the same, but they're all both up, you know, hovering around career highs in both of those regards. Still only about like two rebounds, two assists per game, whatever, three assists per game, depending on the you know, where you're looking. But the, you know, this is a guy who is a primary, just, you know, ball handler and scorer, great shooter. Like, if you look at the success the Clippers had, especially early on the season when they were a top four seed in this, again, stacked Western Conference, Kawhi Leonard was out, and it was just to James Harden, and everyone thought, oh my God, the sky's falling, including us. We didn't think that anything was going to happen here. And then Stormer Norman comes out, and he saved the season for the Clippers. Like, he was their best player. There was a point here he was averaging, like, for like 2-3 weeks, like 28 points per game. Like, he was absolutely going nuclear against teams, you know, and he's still, even since then, you know, he's cooled off reasonably, but he's still averaging amazing scoring numbers. He's still one of the most consistent players, a super underrated defender. And again, he's been in the NBA for 10 years now, man. Like, this is the guy that we want to see winning awards like this, be recognized for, you know, his efforts to improve. You come in here as a second round pick with, you know, barely any upside. Every year he's kind of improved his, you know, his game. He stepped it up in different ways. So, you know, I do think that it is still a lot of love there for Norman, obviously for his Raptors tenure. But I even bias aside, I really don't get why he's not included in this conversation anymore. Because even when Kawhi's come back, Norman Powell has been firmly in the, you know, the top upper echelon of this team. And if we're not going to give him, shout out to the other guy over there in you know, the La La Land. Well, along with him, his teammate Vika Zubac, another guy who, you know, in defensive player of the year talks. I don't think anybody would have ever considered him, you know, to be at that kind of a ceiling. You know, his points have shot up by 5 points per game from last year. He's never, you know, even broken 12 points per game in a season. He's averaging 16 this year. His rebounds are up by three. He's, you know, one of the league leaders, 12.5 fucking boards a game right now. You know, solid rim protection. He's averaging almost three assists per game. Like, these are two guys, teammates, that both have thrived in, you know, bigger roles, bigger opportunities. And again, have both been in the league for, you know, Zubac is only, it's been 9 years for him, 10 years for Norm. I think both of them deserve a lot more love in the MIP race than.
You know what, Matt? I stand corrected. How did I forget about Norman Powell? You're right. Why has he been washed out of history? Because I was trying to brush up. I was looking at the odds like, yeah, who's sort of favorited right now? You're absolutely right about Norm. I guess my explanation for why he's not sort of there is that, like, you know, he's had seasons before, just, you know, looking at his Basketball References page, you know, where he's at around 19 points per game, or I think the first year technically when he got to the Clippers, you know, a little over 20 points. So he hasn't, like, blown the doors off of, you know, previous career highs and points per game and things like that. And I think classically, like, you know, it feels like even when guys move on from the Raptors, they're still, like, underappreciated, you know, sort of the little things that they do. It kind of, like, sticks with players sometimes. I don't even know how to explain it, but, like, Norman Powell is a great defender. People don't really talk about him in that way. They're like, oh yeah, he's a scorer, and he learned how to do some off the dribble pull up stuff from three this year. That's great. And I'm like, he does so much more than that. Like, he's a good player sort of within the offense. He's not a ball stopper. He'll spray that thing around, defends at a high level, can defend a few positions, I would say. And so, like, I think people just sort of see him as one dimensional and, oh yeah, he's maybe a bit better this year and got more opportunity because Kawhi was out. But I agree with you. I think there's more to it than that. And there's more context needed for like, yeah, how important he's been as a running mate for James Harden all year, as a guy who's provided scoring pop that they otherwise would not have had. And he's not just your average bench guy who's, just sort of stepping into a larger role. And I think another part of it too is that I don't think people are used to giving this award to guys who have been in the league for a decade. Like it's kind of, I feel like it's like capped at like, mm-hmm. 7-8 years, maybe. I'd have to go back and look to see sort of how late in the career anyone's ever won this award, but there's gotta be a record if Norm were to win it or close to it, because this sort of transformation doesn't usually happen in year 10 or beyond. But that I agree that that's what makes it even all the more impressive. Like the fact that he can do this, at his age, after having been in the league for so long, to sort of reinvent himself and sort of become that go-to scorer. I don't think that's easy to do. I forgot about him. That's my bad. Throw Norman Powell back in there. Well, back in the leader.
That's okay though, Jordan, because as I was looking through some of his stats and his numbers, I stumbled upon the fact that he's not going to meet the games requirement. Yeah.
Well, there we go.
If he plays the last 11 games, he'll only be at 61 games played.
He was leading the whole time. That's why. Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Adam.
That's, my anger is quenched a little bit here. So now I'm actually, just mad at, is quench the word? I don't know. I'm with quench. Now I'm just mad at the 65 games for the first time. I loved it for anti-Joel Embiid, but it doesn't fit my agenda, so I'm against it.
That's very LeBron of you. Very LeBron of you. Well done.
Yes, thank you. I've been compared to LeBron for many things. But moving on here, Jordan, it's time to talk about two more teams that have had some struggles this season late here. One is kind of interesting. We talked about them offhandedly a little bit here, but both the Memphis Grizzlies and the Los Angeles Lakers have hit a end of season slump, end of season wall. Things have just not been going well for them as they both started to really slide down the Western Conference standings. The Nuggets and especially the Rockets, man, they've been hot as a pistol, really coming out of their shell down the stretch of the season. They were riding a 9-game win streak there before it got broken there, I believe, by the Cavaliers in their last game out. But the Lakers, 3 losses in a row. Grizzlies, 3 losses in a row. Grizzlies have been 5-5 in their last 10. The Lakers, 3-7 in the last 10. Really, really rough basketball from them. And the craziest part about all that is with the return of, you said it, LeBron James into the lineup. I think, to talk about the Lakers first, I think this is actually really, 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 really concerning for the Lakers, because we highlighted it. We said that obviously LeBron and Luka play very similar aspects of basketball, and the fit could work really well offensively. But we said right from the get go, defensively, this is going to hurt this roster, because Anthony Davis was by far and away their best defensive player. He was the defensive anchor when he was able to get out there, and now that he's gone, LeBron is not the young man he used to be. He's 40 years old. God damn it. Like, he can't move his feet. There are pretty much cinder blocks down there with shoelaces attached. He just can't get around. Since he's returned, the Lakers defense has fallen off a goddamn cliff. When he was out, they actually were one of the better defenses in the league. Their defensive rating was skyrocketing. That just having 4 3-and-D guys essentially around Luka, I guess 3, and then you have Jackson Hayes just roving around the rim. But since LeBron's come back, their play has really diminished, I would say, both offensively and defensively, in my opinion, whether the numbers back that up or not. I know the defense, it does. But it just hasn't worked, and I think it is just two ball dominant guys that play super similar that really don't work that well off each other right now. And they've both kind of been in and out of the lineup. I don't think that they've really meshed long enough. And as you're right about to get into the thick of the playoffs, like, I think this is the alarm bells should be ringing a little bit here for the Lakers, because if they can't figure this out, how to make it work with Luka and LeBron, and how to get some defensive integrity put into this lineup, things could get ugly into the playoffs, because any of these potential matchups that you're going to see, whether it's the Grizzlies or the Warriors, potentially the Clippers, or even the Nuggets, depending on how far they can slip, this is going to be a really, really hard first round for them. And I don't think that I would pick them to get out of the first round if we were making our calls right now, because wow. they got hot when they first got that Luka deal done, but I don't know, man, that defense is really awful.
Yeah, right, the now. Defense is bad. You know, we knew that coming in. I mean, the fact that they're still 13th in defensive rating overall is kind of crazy. I mean, they went through that stretch basically since January or midway through January, whatever it was, when sort of leading up to the Luka trade and a little bit after it, where, yeah, they were one of the best defenses in the league. But as a lot of people have been pointing out, like, that was a lot of just high effort, high intensity, you know, at a time where, you know, a lot was going on, you know, for their team, you know, getting you know, good seating was still an issue back then. And they brought guys back. I mean, obviously they traded earlier on for Dorian Finney-Smith. They get Jared Vanderbilt back, and it's like, oh, we've got some athletes now. We can really fly around. But structurally, their defense is, yeah, just not good. They don't have anyone who can stop point guards sort of at the point of attack. They've got, you know, when you look at Vanderbilt and Finney-Smith, like, they've got some guys who can do a little bit of swingman defending. But then, you know, the big defense or big defenders is pretty non-existent for them. I mean, they freaking signed. And then I don't know if this is official yet that they've waived Alex Len, but I heard that that's what they're planning on doing. You know, and they just were looking around for someone after that Mark Williams trade fell apart to provide some sort of interior mm-hmm. defense. Like, it would be really great if they had Maxi Kleba, who people forget, you know, was in that Luka trade, and I believe is still out for the foreseeable future here, with a foot thing. But, you know, if they had him, it would be at least another sort of tall defender that they could throw out there. He's not, you know, first mm-hmm. team all defense, but he's kind of underrated on that end. And you're looking at, you know, Jackson Hayes and Christian Coloco. Like, there's only so much they can do. Rui Hachimura is not the best at defending bigs. Like, we can go down the list, but like, I don't know how worried I am though overall, to be honest with you, because I think the fit issue with him and you know, with Luka and LeBron, I think they're going to sort that out, and they're going to find a way quicker than any other two players would of playing off each other and playing well. Like, again, they still haven't played that much together with LeBron missing, you know, the time that he's missed recently. And I think, you know, the games that they've lost more recently to the Magic last night or whenever it was, and to the Bulls when the Bulls just ran them out the gym and got really hot. Like, I'm not too worried about that given the context of, yeah, LeBron's coming back. They've had guys in and out of the lineup. This is kind of the dog days of the season, as we know. And I don't think it was ever, like, I know there was a bit when I think it was probably like 2 days or something when the Lakers were in the two spot. I think it's way more important, and they knew this from the get-go, that Luka and LeBron be rested going into the playoffs than the Lakers go all out to get the second seed. Like, Luka and the Mavericks got mm-hmm. to the finals from the 5 seed last year. Like, they I don't think that, and LeBron has lots of experience doing that, especially on those Cleveland teams. They were never, there was a, you know, they were mm-hmm. often at the top of the conference, but they would also be 3 seed, 4 seed range. And, you know, it was, again, more important to just get to the playoffs feeling good, and then go from there. I do think it is important though, just if the Lakers want to go far, want to get to the conference finals, or, you know, in my opinion, what their absolute tip top ceiling would be getting to the finals. I think I'm maybe a bit overzealous there, but I could still see it happening for some reason. But I think if they're going to do something like that, they got to hold on to that 4 seed, and they got to hold off Memphis and even Golden State here coming down the stretch. Like, I think they've got to hold on to that. And that's going to be tough for them to do because the Lakers schedule is always super backloaded because the league puts all these awesome, you know, good games to end out the season with, you know, the marquee matchups. And so the Lakers are always have a tough time of it, you know, at this point on till the end of the season. So we'll see what they can do, but I'm in my mind right now, it's not full on panic. It's more like, okay, I know LeBron, you know, you're kind of getting your sea legs back under you. You're still learning how to play with Luka, all this stuff, but we do have to play some good basketball and get some momentum going here, through the back end of the season, and start ramping up now. I don't think they can afford to be complacent and just kind of walk through things as much as I think, you know, Luka would like to, LeBron would like to at his age. So I'm hoping these last two games are more of a wake up call than anything else, but we'll see. I might be wrong and they'll have more, you know, offensive sort of chemistry problems and the defense won't be good enough. I haven't seen enough yet on the downside to be worried, you know, enough to outweigh what I think could be the ceiling of a LeBron and Luka team with, you know, mm-hmm. even just a few guys who can make shots. I mean, Austin Reeves, obviously still there as well. And some defensive talent, you know, at least like, I still think that that team fully realized, is going to be pretty scary to beat. Like, put it this way, I would be more worried to play the Lakers than the Lakers would be to face any of these other teams. Like, you know, as long as in the first round, they can avoid OKC and Denver, anyone else, I actually like LA, in that one. But again, I really think it's important them to get that home court advantage, stay in that four spot and up. And you know, the three seed, the two seed is technically still in play for them too. I mean, you never know what could happen if Luka decides to go off, if LeBron sort of wakes up and starts really competing on defense himself. You know, it could happen. So yeah, I'm not there at panic yet, but I will admit, and it is true, they are a very imperfect team right now. You know, as much as I want them to succeed, which is crazy of me to say about a LeBron team, but it's true, they are going to have challenges going forward, not just now, but in the playoffs.
Well, and looking at the other team here that we want to highlight that's been struggling here in a similar spot, they're fifth right now, just a little bit behind there, the Lakers. It's the Memphis Grizzlies. They're in a kind of a different situation. You know, theirs is much more, you know, strictly injury related. You know, last season we saw them, whatever it was, something crazy, like 40 different players suit up for the Grizzlies at some point throughout the season. You know, they've been kind of back and forth here. Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bain have been, you know, having awesome seasons with John Morant in and out of the lineup. And once again, you know, Tuesday night, he's going to be out in their next game against the Jazz. He's been out for, you know, in and out of the lineup.
He's always in and out
for the last couple of months. And it's just, I think, coming to a bit of a head here. Brandon Clark out for the rest of the season again with an knee sprain. Really sucks. Super underrated player, our Canadian boy. Get well soon. Again, Brandon, horrible injury luck for him. And again, a lot of this team, Santi Aldama, has dealt with injury concerns. Scottie Pippen Jr. has dealt with injury concerns. It just doesn't seem like this team is ever fully realized or fully healthy enough to come at it with 100% power, even when it comes to the playoffs. So I'm a little hesitant with this team as well right now. Like I think when they're 100% healthy, like John Morant is one of the best talents in the NBA. I think that people have kind of, you know, gotten sour on him. I think people turn their nose up at him because, again, he is kind of unreliable in this sense. His scoring numbers are way down this year in comparison. Jaren Jackson Jr. has definitely kind of taken a little bit more of the limelight this year. But I do think that big three of, you know, Morant, Triple J, and Bane, like, they work really well together. They've got an awesome depth and, you know, bench collection there with some of those guys that I mentioned. You know, they've got GG over there, you know, Vince Williams. Like, they've got a lot of guys who can go out there and give you good minutes. So I think when they're healthy, when they're all out there, like, they're a really tough matchup, especially in the postseason. They've got experience in the playoffs as well now. But I am a little bit weary of this team because it's like, who knows what this is roster will look like come playoff time, come round one. Like, they could be fully healthy, they could be missing one or two, because even, like, you know, we talk about Morant, Triple J has had his fair share of injury concerns. Bane has missed plenty of time in the past. So I really do think that their biggest weakness is themselves and their own health coming into the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely health. Like the Brandon Clark thing, that's just so unfortunate because I don't think people realize what he provides to this team when he's healthy. Like, playing in that front court with Jaren Jackson, he can play, with him or not with him. He can slide up to the center if you need. He's got good touch, like a mid-range shot. He's tough as nails, like, sets good screens. He's such an underrated part of this team. And I think a very, you know, in a scenario where the Grizzlies go to the conference finals, win a couple rounds, whatever, like, I think in that world, you need a healthy Brandon Clark to be out there. And he's would be a big contributor. So yeah, the fact that he's not going to be there, that is a lot more pressure on a guy like Santi Aldama and freaking Luke Kennard. Like, it's the same thing I've been saying for years, kind of a similar issue that Cleveland has been having. Like, they don't have the prototypical big wing that is what everyone is after, that everyone needs to win in the playoffs, or, you know, for the most part, you need someone like that to win in the playoffs. They're still like, the amount of pressure now that's going to be on the rookie, Jalen Wells, who's been great. But like in the playoffs, do you trust him to hit a big shot in the corner when John Morant's double teamed and they're loading up on Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane is cold? Like, I know, I agree that their big three is, you know, they're solid. They've been through the wars in the playoffs, but I still don't like think prototypically they have a way to be a great playoff team. They are a great, I will give them, they're a, like borderline amazing regular season team. Like the regular seasons that they've put together here over the past, you know, half decade have been so impressive. Like they're just like a win factory.
Yeah. Top 10, like offensive, defensive.
Like even now they're sixth in offense, which is just crazy. They're a little out of the top 10 now. That's the biggest thing recently. Their defense has really fallen off a cliff, which is a bit concerning.
Yeah. I think they were top five and they're 11th earlier now.
So it's like, you're looking at it, but like, it's just crazy to see the minutes per game that they have. Like how many guys? It's fucking 12 guys who average 18 plus minutes. Some of these guys, to be fair, they're still showing Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia on this list. You know, it's minus those two. But like they're just so deep and they're so good at filtering guys in and out. You know, in order to get these regular season wins, we've seen it time and time again. You can't do that in the playoffs. You have to shorten your rotation. You have to have guys that you trust. You have to have closing lineups that you trust. And I just don't believe that, you know, let's say they even if they are fully healthy and they have Morant, Bain, Jalen Wells, then Jaren Jackson Jr. And then whoever you want to throw out there, whether it's Santi Aldama, Kennard, whatever, is that closing lineup a in the half court when things slow down in the playoffs, is that the sixth best offense, you know, in a playoff context? I think hell no. Like I think they're going to continue to really struggle to score in the half court. That's something John Morant's still not great at. He's a incredible talent. And like, he's better than a lot of other guys I'd want in that situation. But like, if there's one weakness, it's that he's a much better sort of free-flowing full court transition player than he is when things really get bogged down and there's not a lot of space in that half court. And again, that's where that sort of big wing player that can go get their own shot, that's what's so valuable. That's why people laugh and have laughed in the past when I brought up how important Dylan Brooks was to this Grizzlies team those 2 years ago. It's like, no, he was kind of the only kind of bigger wing player who could go and off the dribble get a three. You know, he missed a lot of them and shot you out of games, but he also shot you into a lot of games. I'm just not very high on the Grizzlies from a playoff perspective. You're right that health is still going to be the major issue when it comes down to it. But you know, if they're coming into it in the and are a fifth seed, a sixth seed, I could see them getting bounced in the first round. I really could. I could also see them, that doesn't mean I don't see a world where they could win a round and then give someone a run for their money in the second round, because they are really tough defensively. They play a really cohesive style. But again, I think they're just a much better regular season team than they are a playoff team. When it comes down to it, I think they're relying a lot on some guys that I like, but who aren't as playoff tested as you would like at this point. And I still think, and I've thought this for years, that, and that's why the whole Jimmy Butler thing is like, oh, I don't want to go to Memphis, yada, yada, like all that, which was so strange. Like that's, I still think that's someone that this team needs. Like, I think they are.
100%. Again, he would have been the perfect fit there.
Also it could be like a scoring, like someone more of like the Devin Booker type too, like anyone like that, or even a front court player, like a Lauri Markkanen, you could pair with Jaren Jackson Jr. Like anything like that.
They should have got Brandon Ingram.
Honestly, like that, the amount of like depth that they have, it's the last step to go from like a good team to a great real playoffs, threat. You have to do a consolidation, like a 3-for-1, a 4-for-2 type trade, where you let go of some of these guys who, yes, they help you win in the regular season to sort of raise your playoff ceiling. They still haven't done that yet. So yeah, I'm not that high on the Grizzlies right now. They're sort of tanking, or whatever the opposite of peaking at this point is, sort of at the wrong time. I think they got a lot of work ahead of them, and we'll see what the health situation is when it comes down to it in the playoffs. But I'm not super high on these guys right now.
Well, Jordan, It's about that time. Super late. Probably the latest ever. But it's time for the big dog of the month.
Of February, believe it or not. That was...
Yeah, February.
25 big days ago.
Of the month.
That month ended.
Yeah, this is... We're going to be, next week, we're going to be giving out the fucking March big dog, but we're giving out the February one. We didn't forget, we just didn't record pretty much all of this month in the beginning half, and then we did a March Madness preview, which, you know, didn't feel right to throw in big dog of the month in there.
We should do big dog of the tournament, though. Here we are. We could do that when it's all over.
Yes, that would be a good one. I want to go back. Can we give it to Psycho G, yes. Tyler Hansbrough? Oh, he's the biggest dog there's ever been. EJ Liddell, another good one, more recent. But let's talk about a big dog of the month. This one's going to a repeat big dog. Not this year, but he won one last year. He's you know, one of the driving forces of the Detroit Pistons, one of the best rebounders in the game right now. Always clean on the box outs, super athletic, jumps out of the gym, protects the rim, sets hard screens, does everything.
Malik Beasley,
just kidding. A big dog. Yes. But average a triple-double throughout, or triple-double, a double-double, pardon me, in February, 13.6 points and 11.7 boards per game with a block and a steal, essentially per game. None other than Jalen Duren. Big dog of the month. February. Shout out to Jalen Durant. Shout out to the Pistons. You know, they're getting hot Pistons. Right now.
You got your again, playoff tickets yet or what?
Yeah, my hometown. We're gonna get there, man. We're gonna get there. Only 21 years old. He's won this award twice now, so many more big dog of the months to come. And who knows? Maybe in the future, big dog of the year contender. We'll wait and see. I think March will probably be the last month. It might be like one or two games in April. We'll see. Maybe we'll just rope that into March. I'm not sure how we'll handle that, but we'll determine that when the time comes. But be on the lookout. When we do go our NBA awards special towards the end of the season, we will also be giving out Big Dog of the Year. And for anyone who's interested or forgotten, this year, winners of Big Dog of the Month have been Nikola Jokic, Jakob Poeltl, Karl-Anthony Towns, Josh Hart, and now Jalen Durant. Very elite talents, all of them. Moving on here, Jordan. Banana basketball, banana gonna go and dunk it in the net. Nice. March Madness recap. No, that's a SNL skit with Tim Robinson. I Think You Should Leave. Yeah, I wish I came up with that. I made a mafia movie that fucking sucked. How did I not come up with that? Come on. That's perfect. Comedy gold. But we are in the thick of it, man. Coming up this weekend, it is the Sweet 16. Both of our brackets are mostly intact.
Who is leading a bracket group? Bracket group. I want you to say it. Say it out loud. Who's leading right now?
Fleagle's in the lead by what would be two more. And he was in last coming into the round of 64. But, you know, he's shot up here.
Thank you, Ole Miss. Thank you, BYU.
You also have the – some good upsets there in favor of you, Gonzaga. Apologies to anyone who took them to beat Houston on my word. It was a close game. If they didn't shit the bed in that first half, they would have beat them. I still think they're the better team, but what can you do? Unfortunately, Beefcake Clumley, devoted listener and friend of the program, he's pretty much busted, as well as Tyler Bistro. Obviously, we've mentioned him lots on this show. But both of them are in dire straits right now. They're looking for us to really fall off if they want to pull it out in our little tiny one. Fuck Mikael Jordan. He really screwed the pooch this year as far as the big dog bracket group goes. We should have opened that to the public. I think we did last year, and we didn't get as many
got a few thousand. Thought,
but next year we'll something like that. We'll get you guys in there next year. As we look into it, Jordan, just the entirety of this tournament and who's remaining. Obviously, I think that, you know, people are really kind of overreacting in a way, but I also get it that, you know, this year has been not the most entertaining of tournaments. I mean, we're looking at it right now. There's only one seed that is, on the bottom half of the bracket outside of the top eight in one of the sides, and that's Arkansas as the 10 seed. We've had one buzzer beater
for the first two rounds.
Obviously, some really some really, yeah, Derek Queen, awesome shot. And that was a sweet game between Colorado State and Maryland. You know, that was a hell of a matchup. And we've had some really tight finishes. There's been some good games. But yeah, we just haven't had a lot of those This Is March moments. We haven't had, you know, a lot of the drama and the highlights that we've kind of grown accustomed to. But I don't think that, you know, anyone needs to panic. The best is still yet to come. And I still think there's a lot of good basketball to come here. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, yes, the Cinderella stories are awesome. And I do wish that maybe we had like one or two in here. But at the same time, don't you just want to see the best teams play each other in the biggest games? Like, isn't that what we all want to see?
Yeah, I agree. And like, I agree with everything you said. It's true. I was kind of disappointed after the Thursday and Friday, like the round of 64, that there wasn't a single buzzer beater. Like I don't even remember the last time that has happened. I know that there's been kind of tournaments like that. I swear sometimes they come in bunches. Like I remember one year there was like one every game. Oh, I was like, Jesus, this is insane. So you,
I think that was, I think it was like 2018, the Loyola Chicago year. Crazy. Like I swear to God, that first day was on St. Patty's Day. Like literally, I remember that day so vividly because it was such a fucking goated day. Just drunk, skipping school, university. I paid to skip those classes. But yeah, just getting drunk, loaded in with a bunch of dudes in a room, getting steamy, eating hot dogs, and just watching guys bust brackets. It was awesome.
And you know, so you take those years sort of into account when there's a year like this where, there's not been quite as much of that. But I will say, like, you know, obviously the college officiating, always a bit whack. So, you know, we got to deal with that. And the amount of bunnies that these guys miss at the rim, like layups, really infuriates the fuck out of me. That's not nothing new. But I think overall, this is some of the best, like, basketball that I have seen out of this tournament, like sort of at this stage. That fucking Arkansas St. John's game, for example, was just so good. Like it was so high level. Those guys were trying so hard. There, like the defense and the schemes that we're seeing out of these teams. Like you said, when you don't have these sort of Cinderella teams that kind of blow everything open and it just turns into kind of a wild, wild west type game. When you have these grind it down sort of back and forth heavyweight tilts, like this is some really good basketball that I'm seeing.
Coach Cal versus Patino was also very exciting.
Like even like the late game, the last game that was played, Oregon and Arizona came down to the wire. That was really good as well. Like Michigan State, who I've got you know, winning the whole damn thing, really tested by New Mexico in their last game. Like that was a really, really tough. These guys, it's just I know it's
Florida, UConn, hell of a game.
It's such a stark difference. I know this has always been true, but it feels like even more true now watching these kids dive on the floor, give everything that they have out there compared to what we see a lot in NBA regular season games. Like I'm like transfixed by it more than I remember being in other years. So shout out how hard these guys are playing. I hope it continues. And I hope, we get more sort of hard play, sort of heavyweight battles, but some buzzer beaters thrown in there as well. Because they mean more when they're later on in the tournament as well, rather than you know, just the craziness of those first 2 days. So, super excited for the Sweet 16. It's going to be fun. I've got still, I think, 5 of my 8 Elite 8 teams still alive. So hoping we can keep that going.
Well, that's cute, man.
No, you don't. Seven, so no, you fucking don't. You
yes, no, I you do. Do yes, I do. I do. I've got Auburn, Michigan State, Florida, Texas Tech, Duke, Alabama, and Tennessee. Gonzaga is the only one I don't have.
Well, I'm still,
but that's
ahead.
Also because they're all three seeds.
Real smart picks there, Matt. Look, I feel confident. Working. I feel confident. That's all I'll say.
Well, before we drift off here, I mean, do you still feel confident in your picks? Because there's a couple of these matchups in the Sweet 16, I'm looking at them, man. Like that Florida Maryland. I had Florida in the finals, but I think Maryland that they've got the right guys.
That's who I picked.
I think Derek Queen and them, they're going to match up well.
Hit that up,
Sam. Yeah, I know. I picked Duke to win the whole thing, and I mean they've been fucking unstoppable so far. Arizona's solid, but I don't know if they'll be the ones to really push them personally. BYU and Alabama, that's going to be a hell of a game. BYU is kind of frisky. Yep. Those white boys are shooting. And then you kind of look at Houston, Purdue. I could see a Purdue upset there as well. I think there are some one seeds that are going to have some trouble here. I think Auburn will probably slap Michigan around.
I got Michigan there.
I do think that There's gonna be some big games, and I mean that Texas Tech Arkansas game is gonna be interesting too. Very different styles. Texas Tech is such a weird team. They, you know, first game they shoot a billion threes. Second game they don't shoot any.
But Arkansas is good. They are Arkansas. I think they started the season so poorly. Like, I don't think they're a 10 seed. Under normal circumstances.
No,
so they're good. Watch out.
Yeah, any wavering here in your confidence? Are you still rolling with the
Spartans? I still like the Spartans. I like their path. I mean, they're going up against Ole Miss here, which all things considered, I think is a good outcome for them at this stage. I mean, they are not to be appreciated or underestimated, I should say. Ole Miss, like, what's his name? Padula, their point guard there, has been...
Well, they kick the shit out of Iowa State.
They've been tough as nails. And so, you know, they're not going to roll over. That's going to be a tough one. But I like Michigan State. I also like, you know, I predicted this Kentucky-Tennessee matchup at this point. And I like Kentucky. I like what I've seen from them. Tennessee looks good too. But I'm sensing a little bit of vulnerability there from them. So I think Kentucky can get hot and win that game as well. The Michigan-Auburn one. That is going to be tough, but that Michigan front court is just so fucking dominant. Wolf and what's his name? Golden.
Mm-hmm. Fuck Wolf. Anyone with the last name Wolf playing basketball.
But if they can Broom in some foul trouble, then, you know, you're looking at an interesting game there. So I like, honestly, all of these matchups. Like you said, like if there was a Cinderella in here that was clearly, more than likely going to lose to one of these higher seeds, it'd kind of be like, oh, this is a bit of a throwaway game, but... All of these, I think, can be very close. Even BYU and Alabama, like you said. Alabama's been in some close ones. I had
It's going to be like 86-90.
And they're going to be grinded out. Like, oh, there's nothing like it when there's like 5 minutes left. There's like a two-point game or something. The crowd's into it. You got the coaches screaming. Everyone's sort of hanging on these, every little mistakes. There's really nothing like March. So, I'm excited to see how it all plays out here.
Well, let us know if your guys' brackets are still in play right now, if they're still intact, or who busted them for you, who made you bust, as well as what you think of the Mavericks' chances making the play-in tournament. If you're more worried about the Grizzlies or the Lakers, who's your most improved player of the year? And also, give us your Big Dog of the Month nominees. We want to see it. So hit us up at Big Dog Ball Talk, X, Instagram, Facebook for the old heads, as well as Tickety Talk. We'll be back. Approximately on Friday.
Around.
And we'll be here. Don't you worry. Recapping probably the men's side of the bracket Thursday.
Thursday, Friday.
Will be the first little wave of the Sweet 16. So we'll be able to recap. Maybe we'll do Saturday just so we can get all the college basketball recap in there. We'll see. But again, be sure to check out our Twitter. We'll be updating it over there if anybody wants to stay up to date with the pod. So thank you for listening. This has been Double Top Attico, Jordan Fingal, and that's my good friend Jordan. Always.
I feel like I might have sort of weighed in on this debate before, but I'm just going to say it again because I feel that's how strongly I feel about it.
I don't care that you broke my elbow.
You're great, Matt. You pull out these memes. I literally that unlocked something from a part of my brain. Love that one. Yes. That's a classic. But look.
Autism's awesome, man. It's my superpower.
Raspberries over strawberries, okay? It's a bit... I know that's not going to be that popular. Popular.
Get the raspberries fuck out over of strawberries, here with that
man.
Shit.
The tartness.
You like a nice hairy fruit going in your mouth?
Also, strawberries, a lot of time they'll have little blemishes on them. There's little spots that you can bite into, other ones you can't. Raspberries, consistent, little bit sour, a little bit sweet. Oh my god, give me a raspberry any day over strawberry. Not to put down strawberries. I like them too.
I'll give you a raspberry.
Very nice, very good.